I'd like to talk on a very, very different topic, just something that I've been involved in, and something about Jewish medical ethics, and totally out of left field, but it might be an interesting change of pace. First, you all know the famous joke about the first Jewish president was elected, and somebody went over to his mom and said, "You must be so proud of your son, he became president of the United States." And she says, "Well, not really. His brother was a doctor." And we know that Jews have always been involved in medicine. But it's interesting that there's a little bit of a religious and philosophical question that's concerned with medical treatments. And that is, you know, Christian scientists do not believe in going to a doctor, because their theory is that if you get sick, it was the will of God. And if you try to alleviate illness by going to a doctor or getting surgery or whatever it would be, you are contravening the will of God. And therefore, the only permissible therapy you can have is spiritual therapy that involves prayer, meditation, repentance, and all of those things. And you're actually not allowed to go to a doctor. This is a belief of Christian scientists. And every single year, there are state criminal prosecutions against parents, Christian Science parents, who do not give medical treatment to their children, and they are sometimes arrested for child abuse. Now, these are not inherently abusive parents. These are not people that, you know, beat their kids. These are good parents, but they don't believe in taking their kid to a doctor. And even though, in terms of American law, they have a constitutional right of freedom of religion, that they don't have to go to a doctor, right? So if I don't want to go to a doctor because of my religious beliefs, I have a free exercise of religion right not to go to a doctor, but legally I don't have that right for my minor children, and therefore the state will come in, the state may terminate custody, the state may even remove the kids from the parents' house and the like. Well, suffice it to say that Judaism rejects that theological premise, because again, consistent with the notion that divine providence still requires human effort. Let's consider, for example, working for a living. We believe that my success in life, my economic success, comes from God. But that doesn't mean I can stay in bed and the money is going to pile up. I am obligated to utilize human effort in order to receive God's blessing. This is called, the Hebrew word for that is called Hishtadlut. Hishtadlut is the human effort, like the old saying, which is actually true, God helps those who help themselves. So consistent with the idea that parnasa, making a living, comes from God, but it requires human effort, we do take the same attitude towards medical intervention as well, that God is indeed the source of healing, but God does require that we utilize whatever natural avenues are available, whether it's medicine, whether it's surgery, whether it's preventative medicine in terms of maintaining your health, meaning things don't happen by themselves. The blessings of God don't come unless you put in the requisite effort. So consequently, there is nothing inherently inconsistent with faith that one seeks medical intervention, meaning we reject the Christian Science paradigm that somehow medical therapy is a violation of faith in the Almighty. We believe the other way around, that medical interventions, when necessary, are the conduit through which God will give you healing, provided, of course, you also augment it with prayer and repentance and good deeds and charity and all of those things as well. Three times in the Amida every day, we ask God to heal the sick, but we still have to go out and go to the doctor. Now, that is certainly the majority position in Judaism, and as you know, some of our greatest rabbis have been physicians. Maimonides is the outstanding example. Maimonides was not only one of the greatest rabbinical scholars who ever lived, he was considered to be one of the greatest physicians of the Middle Ages. In fact, Maimonides, I may have mentioned, was a triple hitter. He had three careers in which he was one of the greatest of in the age. He was a master of halacha, Jewish law. He was a master of religious philosophy, and he was a master of medicine. And some of his medical advice is still, now obviously, of all of those three, the one that's most dated is the medical advice. But he wrote treatises on asthma and on different types of medical conditions. But some of his advice is still very, very true. He was one of the first physicians who identified nutrition as a very important part of maintaining health, and exercise as well. So he did talk about the notion of preventing. In fact, I see now that there's actually a diet book that somebody put together, How to Diet According to the Rambam. The Rambam is Maimonides. They actually take, you know, his advice, and they kind of modernize it a little bit, and they show you how you can have a diet that fits the views of Maimonides. But okay. Say again?
He does exercise more.
He does, well, that's basically it, but Maimonides actually gives you specific foods that are good. For example, well, kosher for sure. That's not the issue. He was presupposing kosher food. But different types of fruits and vegetables, you know, what types of fruits, what types of vegetables. He was a big proponent of figs and dates. He liked figs and dates. And the truth of the matter is, a lot of nutritionists talk about the fact that there's kind of an optimal balance of fiber and sugar in a fig. A fig is a very high fiber type of fruit, but it also has a very high sugar content, and at least if you don't have diabetes, it's something that can give you a sense of fullness, whatever. So, I mean, we could look at that too. But the point is that even in medicine, Maimonides had advice to us that is still very pertinent. So Jews do believe in medicine, right? We do believe that medicine is fine. In fact, it's very interesting. Some of you may have heard of Dr. Ben Carson. Have you heard of him? He's now getting involved in politics, but he's a black man. You'll see why this is important. And for many years, he was the head of neurosurgery at Johns Hopkins Hospital in Baltimore. Quite an amazing surgeon. He was involved in separating conjoined twins. Very, very complicated and complex operations. He's now retired, and he's lately become, I hope he's not going to tarnish his reputation this way, but he's lately become the darling of far-right Republican politics, and you know, he's making speeches against Obamacare and the like. But besides his great talent as a surgeon, he has an amazingly inspirational story, because he grew up in a single-family household in a ghetto of Detroit. In fact, Detroit is almost 100% ghetto. The whole city is basically a ghetto in Detroit. And when I say single parent, I obviously mean mother, because dad in these families is just gone, unknown. And all of his friends, all of the kids he grew up with, are either dead or in prison. And he was on the road of simply getting into drugs and getting into gangs. And he remembers the day that he turned his life around, that in a blind rage he took a knife and he stabbed somebody, intending to kill the person. But miraculously the knife hit a belt buckle and snapped. And this was his epiphany, where he realized that his life was out of control and he had to change. And thank God for him, he had a very strong mother. And there were some male people in his life that gave him, you know, hope and confidence and the like, kind of big brothers in his life. And, you know, he became what he became. He went to a first member of his family to ever go to college, and then to go to medical school, and then become one of the great surgeons in the world. And what he does is, he went around, even when he was a busy surgeon, he went around inner city schools to give speeches to kids about not giving up and keep on fighting. Now, I'm mentioning him because he's not Jewish, but he does talk about the deep religious faith in God as the source of his success. And he says before every operation, he prays that God should guide his hands and he feels divine energy coursing through his fingers as he's doing the most delicate manipulations of the brain. Right? You can't really mess up with brain surgery. There's not too much of a margin of error. Again, I don't want to be lightheaded, but you know what they say, the scalpel slips, there goes the piano lessons, you know. You can't really fool around with the brain that much. But he says he prays before every operation. And that's a beautiful idea, that when the doctor and the patient try to bring God into their equation. Now, I don't mean to say, of course, that a doctor should kind of tell a patient, you know, I mean, the doctor shouldn't impose on the patient the doctor's religious beliefs. I'm not suggesting that that would be the doctor's role. But the doctor in his own heart thinks of God and the patient thinks of God. If they're both Jewish and they share a common religion, they can even talk about it together. And that can make a very big difference. In fact, there's even some anecdotal medical research, I don't want to call it scientific, but it's been written up in journals, that prayer itself has a therapeutic efficacy. Now, you understand the big problem here. It doesn't simply mean people who pray tend to get better more often than people who don't pray, because that wouldn't prove anything, because that could be a placebo effect. Because there is a certain placebo effect. If I believe in God, even if there isn't such a thing as God, then I will get better. But what they've shown is this. They've shown that prayer can be beneficial even if it's done by people that you're not even aware of. Let's imagine that you're sick and somebody is praying for you and you don't even know they're praying for you. So you can't talk about psychosomatic mind over matter. It can't be a placebo because you don't even know that somebody's praying for you. And yet, there is some anecdotal evidence that's been written up in medical journals that prayer from a distance actually helps. So, there is this notion of spiritual energy and healing that's in the world. But okay. But be it as it may, I do want to point out that one of the very fascinating teachings of Judaism is that you'll sometimes find contradictions. Our tradition is so rich and so deep that for every proposition that you say, you'll often find a counter-proposition. So the first lesson I'm telling you is that Judaism is in favor of medical intervention, high-tech. We believe that the doctor and the whole medical industry can be enlisted as conduits to bring divine blessing into the world. That's proposition one. But then I'll show you another proposition that seems to go the opposite. One of the righteous kings of Israel, he was a descendant of King David, was a king called Hezekiah, Chizkiyo HaMelech. He was a righteous king. And the Talmud recounts that he did a number of things, some of which the sages thought were good, and some of which the sages thought were bad. One of the good things he did, right, one of the good things he did was he concealed the book of healing, the book of cures. He withdrew it from circulation. What is the book of cures? So Rashi explains that the book of cures was an ancient book of medications and drugs and what they were for. There was medical information in there. He withdrew the information from the general public, and this was deemed to be a praiseworthy, laudatory action. But the Talmud doesn't say why it was praiseworthy. So listen to what Rashi says. Rashi says it was praiseworthy because people were relying too much on medicines and drugs, and they were not praying to God. So he curtailed the access of medical information to force people into a more spiritual modality of healing. Now, interestingly enough, that sounds a little bit like a Christian Science philosophy that basically says, don't go to the doctor, just go to God. And yet, that is what Rashi says is reflected in that Talmudic text. Now, Maimonides, you would expect really doesn't like that interpretation. After all, he himself was a doctor. But he still has to deal with the Talmud. So Maimonides actually quotes the Talmudic passage. He quotes the interpretation that I just gave you. And he ridicules it. He says, that's ridiculous. Maimonides says, he who says, I will not go to the doctor because I believe in God, is as foolish as a person who says, I will not eat the food because God will feed me. Yeah, God may enable you to have the food here, but you got to eat it. God gives you health, but you got to go to the doctor. It's like the joke they say about the believer in God that was caught in a flash flood. I'm sure you've heard this, and again, it's not so funny because unfortunately we've had incidents in New Orleans and then Katrina and then tsunamis. But, you know, the water is getting higher and higher. He's sitting on his elevated porch. The water is coming up, and the boats come by and say, we'd like to take you. And he says, no, God takes care of me. And the water gets higher. He goes into the house. He goes to the second floor. Helicopters come, airplanes come with rope ladders. He says, I don't need your help. God helps me. I am his faithful servant. Finally, he goes up to his roof, and the water is getting higher and higher and higher. And there are still attempts to rescue him, and he turns all of them down. And the water finally is going to overwhelm him. And in his last moments of consciousness, he cries out to God and he says, Almighty God, I have been your faithful servant for so many years. Why have you abandoned me in my time of need? And a voice came from heaven and said, I tried to save you 5 times. Who do you think sent the helicopter and the boats? How did you want me to save you? By splitting the water? Well, that happens sometimes. But you're not allowed to rely upon that. Even in halacha, it says you don't rely on miracles. God sometimes does miracles for us. But you are not allowed to operate on that assumption. You have to follow the normal order of things that God put into the world. So Maimonides ridicules the idea that somehow let's take away medical information so people will just turn to God. Now the question then becomes, how does he interpret the passage? So why was Chizkiyahu praiseworthy when he withdrew the book of healing? So listen to this. It's mamash 180 degree. The same Talmudic text has 180 degree different interpretation. Maimonides says the problem with the book of healing was that the lay public had access to it. And they were self-medicating and not going to doctors. So he withdrew the information not to prevent people from going to doctors, but to make people go to doctors. In other words, this is like, I like to call this the AMA Talmudic interpretation. You know, the American Medical Association absolutely hates when any non-physicians get involved in any type of medical advice. And this is exactly the point. So you see what's so fascinating here. We have this identical Talmudic passage. King Hezekiah took away the book of medicines. According to Rashi, it is to encourage people to avoid the practice of medicine and to seek spiritual healing. According to Maimonides, it is to force people to go to doctors and not rely on the ignorant lay assumptions of self-medication, because as Maimonides says, when an untrained person tries to take care of their own medical treatment, they can also often kill themselves because they really don't understand drug interactions, and they don't understand dosages, and they don't understand what things are for, etc. By the way, this issue is very, very prevalent today. You know, in the olden days, When I was younger, and you know, doctors used to make house calls. Have you ever heard of that? This is ancient history, but a doctor would actually come to your house. That day is very long gone. But there used to be a notion that medicine was a mysterious black box that you, as a patient, had no input in. Meaning, the doctor would simply tell you what to do. You are not supposed to question it. You are not supposed to have your own opinion. And you simply do what the doctor tells you to do. Now, sometimes the doctor was autocratic and dictatorial. And sometimes it was Marcus Welby, a very, very kindly, nice fellow. But nevertheless, the bottom line was that the dominant thread in medicine was what you might call paternalism. Very rarely maternalism, but there weren't that many women doctors, but paternalism. Doctor knows best, and you just listen. Now, things have changed today, primarily because of the advent of the internet. You know, on the internet, there is a huge mass of information regarding healthcare and medicine. Around 60% of it is junk, either totally untrue or junk. But there are kernels of truth. But the net result is that patients now come to doctors with reams and reams and reams and reams of information, some of which is accurate, some of which is not accurate, some of which, even if it's accurate, is not understood by the patient. Some of it might be. And as a result, doctors are much less autocratic today, because patients may question all sorts of things based on things that they see online. And a lot of doctors hate it. A lot of doctors feel that patients don't really understand this information, and they're questioning medical decisions. And this is exactly what Maimonides was talking about. Maimonides basically said, now he had kind of an older model, he basically said, it's better to be totally ignorant than, or they say, a little knowledge is a dangerous thing. That patients who come in with distorted partial knowledge might actually hurt themselves much more. So this is Maimonides' idea of why Hezekiah withdrew the Book of Cures. Not because he thought there was something wrong with going to doctors, but the other way around, he thought there was something wrong with lay people having too much information, because they wouldn't know how to process it, they wouldn't know how to use it, and that is why he withdrew that information. Now, there is a statement in the Talmud about different professions, and there's a statement that says, the best of the doctors will go to hell. Which is kind of negative, and again, I have my apologies if any of you have family members that are physicians. But again, even that is interpreted in relatively positive ways. The best of the doctors refers to a doctor that is arrogant. He fancies himself the best, and because he thinks he's the best, he will not consult with those he regards as his inferiors. And he will not be willing to admit he made a mistake. So really what the teaching says is that if because of my arrogance I do not admit my mistakes and the patient suffers, I go to hell for that. But if, on the other hand, I'm willing to admit my mistakes, I'm willing to consult, that's a great thing. You see, the problem is only when you think you're the best, you think everybody is your inferior. You become conceited, you become arrogant. When you become arrogant, you are prone to mistakes. Because an arrogant person does not have the courage to admit when he has done something wrong. And there are patients who will suffer. There are people who are going to either die, or even if they don't die, they may suffer pain because the doctor is not willing to admit that a mistake was made. And mistakes are made. Mistakes are made in medicine all the time. Again, it's not necessarily through anybody's fault. It's not even through malpractice, but even innocent mistakes. Especially when you have residents who don't sleep for 30 hours or whatever it is, you make a lot of mistakes when you don't get enough sleep. Okay, so this is kind of our general orientation towards medicine. So now let me just take one specific area and just talk about it relatively quickly. And that is, this is an issue that comes up a lot. What does halacha say about something like organ donation? Okay, we now have, or the way transplant surgeons like to call it, they like to call it spare parts surgery.
Forbidden, huh?
Well, let me talk about it a little bit. Can I donate a heart? Can you receive a heart? What about a liver? What about a lung?